Welcome to episode 15 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering season 1, episode 12, which is titled Vaulting Ambition. But before we get to that, we have some feedback from last week's episode. All right, so we will open hailing frequencies. And first is a voicemail from Cyberman.
Hello, this is Cyberman. I'm from California in the United States, and this is for Star Trek Discovery. Hi, this is in response to, I just listened to the podcast, and this is for the Wolfen side. And I have to say, I agree with Ruthie. I really liked the episode. I found it interesting and compelling, and I completely ignored the plot hole where when Tyler was beamed back with the data. I just thought that was brilliant. It was a brilliant, sneaky tactic. And I do agree that I don't think Burnham cared very much whether he was hurt or whether he died or not. I think she is feeding the wolf. But I have a bunch of thoughts about that. I just enjoyed the whole compelling reveal. I did enjoy the compelling reveal of Tyler, and it was about time that we knew he was Voke. I don't quite understand what they did and whether they took Tyler. I don't quite understand all the changes to his body. So they must have taken a Klingon body and made him Tyler. And so he's originally Voke, and he was cosmetically altered to be Tyler. And they used poor Tyler, who was an actual real prisoner. In any event, I'm not quite sure of the machinations, but I just really, it was compelling. It was compelling to see. I also was wondering about Saru, Slave Saru. I think he'd be in a perfect position to be a spy, because, you know, they do ignore slaves, especially someone so close. And he would not want his captain to be murdered. He would have to do something to assist her. One, because they'd probably execute him if she goes, you know, slaves probably go with the master kind of thing. But also, if she's in a good, if he has a system of communicating with the rebels in place, then he has a good reason to save her. I also think that the Stamets, the Mirror Universe Stamets, is probably working with the rebels. Because why else would he inject himself? The ISS would use the tardigrades. There is no doubt about it. They wouldn't care about destroying the tardigrades. And once they found it useful, they would hunt them down, and they would find them and keep them and breed them, for God's sakes. I mean, they would not care. So if they have a spore drive in the Discovery and Mirror Discovery, then Stamets injected himself because he is an assistant. He wants to assist the rebels. I also find it very hopeful that there are humans being executed for seditious thoughts against the Emperor, because it means that there's hope. All Terrans aren't vicious, which we kind of saw from Deep Space Nine's episode with the slaves, you know, O'Brien, who is a slave, Smiley. But in any event, I really enjoyed it. I'm really enjoying Star Trek Discovery. I was also wondering about Lorca. I love Lorca, by the way. It's my favorite character. I love him looking all worse for wear. I mean, Jason Isaacs is such a good actor. I mean, he's just looking beat up and worse.
And unfortunately, it ends there. So I don't know what else she was going to say. I wonder what she thinks about Lorca now.
Yeah. All right. Very good. She said some of my favorite words, by the way.
Like what?
Ruthie's right. Oh man.
Yes. Yes. Ruthie's right. Anything you wanna say about that? I like some of the stuff that she covers, I think, is kind of covered over this episode. Like it is kind of explained what they did to Tyler. Like it's, you know, kind of a, they took Voke's body, overlaid, you know, the essence of Tyler, and you know, that's what mm-hmm. you got.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Cyberman, for your feedback.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Next is James. He says, Hey guys, a bit of a rough week, but I'm caught up. Just watch this week's episode and listen to the podcast. I'm giving this week's episode 6 Nameless Saru Baths. A bit of a letdown for me after last week being such a phenomenal episode. I think my biggest problem was dissecting everything from a military standpoint. Being retired Navy, I just saw way too many tactical errors. Many were already covered in other feedback. Burnham's decision to go down to the rebel base really did seem to be a sort of a forced plot device to reveal Tyler as Vok. I mean, I guess we could sort of suspend disbelief with the rationale that what might open Klingon minds in the Mirror Universe might open Klingon minds in the Prime Verse, but I don't know. I also thought her sell of the rationale for doing so to the Shenzhou crew was weak, and they pretty well saw through it immediately. I agree with Mark as well, with the rebels choosing to have their base in such a wide open area as well. Not only do they have to ensure their camo doesn't fail, but they think the Empire was above carpet bombing. I guess they could have had some kind of tunnel system to protect them, but who knows? Hopefully Sunday we'll see they had some sense and that this was indeed the case. One thing, though, that everyone talked about was that Discovery was so close to beam Tyler on board after being spaced. Everyone was asking how this could happen, but let's look at it this way. They're the ISS Discovery, so they can fit right in. The transport of Tyler was definitely risky, though, if any other ship was paying attention to the outcome of the execution. So that's a bit of a yes-no situation. I did really enjoy the updates to the Tellarites and Andorians, though. They were subtle enough that they retained the majority of the classic look while making it more modern, unlike the unrecognizable Klingons. Brian? On a side note, on the podcast, you mentioned the Tellarites always reminded you of dogs. They were always kind of pig/boar-like to me. I also enjoyed the reveal of Georgiou as the Emperor and look forward to see if they might link her lineage to Hoshi. Another side note was you guys discussed the divergence of the Mirrorverse with Prime and whether it happened from a single event. It reminded me of another great show I watch on Amazon called The Man in the High Castle. If you guys haven't watched, I highly recommend it. That's it for this week. Looking forward to Sunday and the next podcast. Well, I'm going to play this early because it's fitting right now.
Incorrect.
And that is, you know, when I said it last week and I said dogs, it was like one of those things where I immediately knew I was wrong. You know what I should have done before I said that is to take a look at, you know, picture of the old Tellarites. Well, yes, that they look like pigs, and why I thought dogs, I don't know, but it was one of those things. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I had a feeling I was wrong. And I was wrong. So,
yeah, that never happens to me. Just kidding.
Incorrect.
I am totally kidding. I'm really not that conceited.
I know.
Yeah, I was wondering, honestly, I was racking my brain trying to think of what species looks like a dog. And I probably just mumbled, yeah, because I had no idea what you were talking about.
I remember in the first season of Next Gen, there was I can't remember which one it was. It was the Antikins and the Sele, and they were going through some trade talks or peace talks or something, and they were like arch enemies. I remember one of those races kind of looked like a dog, but
I'm sure that's true. I just could not remember and put me on the spot, and I was like, oh.
Yep. Anyway, I was definitely wrong with that. So.
Oh, and The Man in the High Castle. I've thought about watching that. Thank you.
Oh, I have seen the pilot of that, and it was really good, but I never gone back and watched the rest of it. So it
as Rufus
it is on my list, but right now I am continuing my rewatch of Deep Space Nine. So I am now season 3, episode 26.
Very good.
So, yeah. All right, let's move on to this week. So season 1, episode 12 of Star Trek Discovery is titled Vaulting Ambition. It's written by one of the co-executive producers, Jordan Nardino, whose writing credits include Quantico, Smash, Gilmore Girls, and Desperate Housewives. And it was directed by a veteran TV director, Hanel M. Culpepper. All right, so let's play some shipwide announcements. Because I do have a couple of things for news this week. A couple of awards, actually. Star Trek Discovery was nominated for a Visual Effects Society Award. So I was trying to go back and look to see what the award was, and I could not find it. If I find it, I will add that to the notes of the episode. Star Trek Discovery has also been nominated for a GLAAD Media Award for Best Drama Series. Hmm. So that's pretty good.
Cool.
Last news item, and this is, we don't get much for ratings on this show, but Clint from the Facebook group posted that the TV ratings for Canada for episode 10 are out, and Space attracted 1.21 million viewers in the live plus 7-day playback. So that, if you roughly look at that, Canada's, you know, about 10th of the population of the United States. If that was in the States, it would be getting about 12 million viewers. So that's pretty good. I mean, comparatively. So, all right. Well, now it is time to discuss what we thought of this episode. So, Ruthie, what did you think of Vaulting Ambition?
I am going to give this episode a 9.5 mycelial networks.
Nine, you said 9.5?
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to give it a 9.6 devious mirror universe Captain Lorcas. And I was going to say something else, but listeners used it more than once, so I didn't use it, but we'll get to it after. I'll tell you what it was after. All right. Well, we got some other listener ratings. Why don't you start with Andreas?
Or Andreas.
Andreas, sorry.
Says, I give this episode 10 out of 10. That's it. 10 out of 10.
And with the one of the things that I was about going to give for a rating, James says, I'm giving this episode 8.5 murders shuriken. I don't know
how to murdered by shuriken thingy for hearing too much mirror universe emperor confidants.
Yes, thank you.
Maybe I should read the difficult ones.
All right, Mark gives it 7.5 delicious ganglia.
Oh man, yeah. I felt so bad for her.
That was awful.
Yeah. Okay. Rick from Cleveland says, wow, this episode gets 9.5 flying fidget spinners of death out of 10.
Fred from the Netherlands gives it 8 DNA molecules from a Contaxin parasite on Tanata 7. That was pretty gruesome.
Yeah. Okay. Martin says 9 lightly sauteed threat ganglia out of 10.
Yeah, so I was going to use tasty, yummy kelpian threat ganglia or deadly fidget spinners. So you guys were thinking the same kind of things I was thinking. All right, it's now time for our yeses.
Yes.
All right. Well, why don't you give James's.
All right. James tells us that his yeses are the Lorca reveal along with flashbacks. We now know the deal with his eyes and why he didn't want them fixed, as well as some foreshadowing in the flashback to prior episodes that at least I didn't catch. And he says another yes to seeing more Discovery medical staff. Was one of those the long-awaited CMO?
I hope so. Yeah, we never seen her before either. We'd seen a couple of other doctors or what seemed to be doctors, but seemed like she definitely was medical a doctor. Personnel. Hopefully she was the CMO. Mm. Guess we'll know soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some other yeses that come in audio feedback variety, so we'll hear them later. All right. Well, I've got a couple. One is obviously Georgiou's fidget spinner of death. That was so cool. I had to watch that like several times just to see it do its thing. I guess they had shown it in slow motion because they, you know, the officers or, you know, whoever those people are, didn't react, you know, they literally got that thing sliced through their heads and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All right. I'll give my second, and that I have to give a yes to acting Captain Saru, and specifically for his the way that he dealt with Laurel and him trying to get her to, you know, treat Tyler. I thought when he beamed him in there, I thought that was so cool. I thought that was a badass move. And to me, he is actually showing for at least, I don't know, for the first time, but certainly definitely in this episode, he was acting like a good captain. So, and it sounds like he might still be the captain for a while, maybe forever.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, so, but judging the way that he acted in this episode, I was very pleased to see him, you know, act in an assertive way and not a threat ganglia type scaredy cat way. So
yeah, I guess if I were to give a yes, it would be to Tilly again because she's my favorite. I guess I don't know, love her. She's always so funny. She brings the laughs and. That's like the quickest way to my heart. So
his face is so dewy.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh my gosh. Mm. She's so funny.
All right. Well, if that's it, it's time for our no's.
Okay.
No! All right. Well, James has a no. He says the Lorca reveal. Only because it destroys my theory of the opportunistic prime verse Section 31 Lorca attempting to usurp power in the mirror verse as I posed after episode 10. Well, I don't know if that actually kills that theory because I was thinking about this. I have it in my notes later on, but I guess we can bring it up here. Okay, so Lorca in the prime universe, he got all this power. Who gave him that power? Like, it makes me wonder if Section 31 knows that he comes from the mirror universe and saw him as like a guy that could, you know, take action and gave him this power.
Wait, what are you talking about? Which universe does he have power in, supposedly, or whatever?
He was given power. Like he supposedly had all this power given to him in the prime verse. Like it was something that, you know, he brought up with Cornwell that she was uncomfortable about how much power he was given to, you know, wage the war in any way he saw fit or something. And I still wonder if that, and we also saw in the very first episode on Discovery, episode 3, we saw those black uniform Starfleet, and we still don't know who those are. And I'm still wondering if they may be Section 31. Because how did he get all this power if he's from the Mirror Universe? And why?
Well, we don't know what happened to Prime Universe Lorca. We don't know what kind of position Prime Universe Lorca has. So I don't know that we can necessarily say.
We will hopefully find out soon.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, this, to me, gave me lots of questions this episode. So I have many things to bring up, but that certainly is one thing that I thought of. All right. Now for our no's. I put down a no that Burnham gave up the details. Said she was going to give up the details about the displacement activated spore hub drive, what we normally call the spore drive. And basically she was giving that up just to make sure that Georgiou didn't kill her. Yep. So it's not like she got like details about the Defiant or anything like that. It was literally, well, if you give me this, I won't kill you. Which makes me wonder, okay, so if she needs that, what the heck was Stamets doing? And what the heck is Mirror Discovery doing? Do they not have a spore hub drive? And
I would say no.
Are they using it for weapons? Like, you know, remember Burnham thought initially that, you know, it was a weapon. Maybe it is a weapon in the Mirror Universe. Who knows?
Who knows indeed?
Captain Killy.
Yeah. I didn't think, I was like, man, this does not sound like a good idea. So.
Do you have any no's?
I thought that Saru's threat ganglia should have been going like crazy when he was in the med bay with Tyler.
Yeah.
So I guess just the inconsistency there and the fact that it's not explained. Like if they had said something about, like you had said, that he seems like he's becoming a better captain, maybe that means that he's feeling less threatened, so they're not going off all the time.
Maybe.
But I don't know. It kind of just, again, seems like they're sort of, well, they're inconsistent. That's the best word I can use to describe what's going on there.
That is an accurate word to use, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, I believe it's time for open hailing frequencies. All right. And let's get into voicemail. We got, of course, a voicemail from Mark. Here we go.
Yay.
Hi, Ruthie. Hi, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 7.5 delicious ganglia. Now, I'm going to start right off with my turbo lift up and down moments, starting off with the down. According to my DVR, this episode finished 49 minutes in instead of the full 60 minutes. And when I say 49 minutes, that's including the commercials. So I don't know without commercials how long this episode was, but it was probably the shortest one of the season. And it made me feel like we could have maybe got more out of the episode. Now, I was disappointed to see that the Discovery crew are back to wearing Starfleet uniforms. I thought that while they were in this Mirror Universe, they were supposed to pretend to be a Mirror Universe ship. And yet Tilly and Saru and the doctors and everybody else were back to wearing Starfleet uniforms with their insignias and everything. Now, I'm not exactly sure about the Emperor's Palace ship, if it's being powered by a sun or if that's something being generated by the ship. But I can tell you that I thought the CGI for that part could have been a little bit better. I thought it was a little too video game-ish. Now, I understand that Michael had to be carrying Georgiou's Starfleet emblem in order to get this whole plot line going. But really, when you're going in undercover like that, you shouldn't have anything that can give you away. So I don't know why she had that thing in her possession, even though it did turn out to help. And my last turbolift down thing is, are you telling me that on a ship like Discovery, they don't have anything in medbay that could sedate a Klingon? That just doesn't make sense. Turbolift up moments. I love the interaction between Paul and you. Those two actually had a lot of chemistry on screen, and I'm really sorry to see that the Doctor is going to be gone. I love the dinner scene between Michael and the Emperor. When Burnham found out she was eating Kelpien, the look on her face and the gag she did, it was so realistic. I just love that. I wonder if she'll be mentioning that part to Saru in her debriefing. And I love the scene in the throne room where the Emperor kills all her people there with that little round disc. That actually reminded me of the end scene in the movie Wanted where Angelina Jolie's character kills everybody with a curved bullet. Sorry if I spoiled that for anyone. Now on to my discussion. I know Michael blurted out what she did to the Emperor in order to save her life, save herself from being executed, but does she really think that the Emperor will help her? I mean, I love the line when the Emperor says, "Was Yurg Jarju a woman of honor?" And when Michael said yes, and then the Emperor says, "Then you have no reason not to believe that I am as well." What a clever line. She never actually told Michael that you can trust me, that I am a person of honor. All she said is, "If Yurg Jarju was a woman of honor, then you have no reason to believe that I'm not." It's not an admission. She never actually said that she was, and I love that line. Because we can obviously tell that the Emperor has aspirations for our universe. Why else would she be wanting schematics from the spore drive? There's an entire universe ripe for the picking in her mind. Now, it was interesting to find out that Burnham and Lorca from the Mirror Universe were actually conspiring to take over the Empire. That was a neat little twist. I wasn't expecting that Burnham was involved. And I'm wondering if the mirror version of Stamos, he mentioned that he's been in a coma for a long time, much longer than our Stamos is. And he said he went into a coma because of an accident. I wonder if that accident is what sent Lorca into our universe. And if that's the case, whose side is Mirror Stamos on? Is he with the Emperor? He's on her ship. Or is he one of Lorca's people that's still around? Now, personally, what I think is going to happen is Lorca is going to have a chance to take out the Emperor and Michael is going to save her. I don't know if she'll kill Lorca or just stop him, but I think that she's going to resent being used and manipulated the way she was by Lorca. So she's going to protect Georgiou the way that she couldn't protect her captain Georgiou in our universe. And then she will have a bargaining chip with the Emperor in order to get back home. Right now, the Emperor said, "Give me the schematics to your ship and you can have your freedom." Well, I think that the Emperor is going to feel in Michael's debt and maybe that'll help them get home. They'll work together. And regarding the whole microbial network, I wonder what the accident was and what is exactly corrupting the network and how can Stamos save it? Now, with the whole Tyler storyline, I didn't realize that Laurel was a brain surgeon or whatever she did, that she's the only one that's able to do that. And what exactly did she do to Tyler? All she said was she can help him. But did she help him become more Tyler or did she get rid of Tyler and help him become more Vok? Can't wait to see. And of course, it was nice to be right from my prediction from a couple of weeks ago that Lorca is from the Mirror Universe. It's been confirmed now. And if that's the case, if he no longer comes back to Discovery as captain, does that mean Saru becomes captain of Discovery? And will that be the means for Michael to get her rank back and become his number one? I can't wait to see how that turns out. Anyways, that's all I have for this week's episode. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. It's Mark from Ontario, Canada.
Oh, thank you, Mark. And as usual, the customary showcase award. Thank you, as usual. I'll cut this off because we have lots of feedback tonight.
Well, and he should get it for being right, too.
Well, that's true. I'll give him this instead. Yeah, you're definitely right. So, okay.
That was so cool. As I was watching the episode, I think I was like just after right after the cold open and then the opening sequence, I was like, man, the more I watch him, the more I'm convinced he's from the Mirror Universe. And then he was.
Yeah, I kept on going back and forth on it, but it was one of those things like when we started putting two and two together, when he, you know, wouldn't bow it. Like, I thought, well, he's either really throwing himself into the part or he is from the Mirror Universe. And sure enough, he is.
Yeah.
Okay. First thing you mentioned was length. So I wanted to discuss this because I know both of us had a reaction to it. This was the shortest episode so far at 37 minutes and 53 seconds. And that does not include a 1 minute previously on, and then Next time at 36 minutes, 18 seconds, and then about a minute of credits after that. So in total, the actual episode was 35 minutes and 18 seconds. And that even, I didn't even factor in the theme, you know, so if you take that out, it's even less. So this was a really short episode. Now, Ruthie reminded me of this. Well, not that I needed reminding, but there was an episode 8, that Latin one. Si vis pacem parabellum or something like that. That one I thought, which was actually not quite as short as this one, but it felt like it was, there was like a scene missing, like with, I thought that they could have gone more into Saru's change and we didn't see that. And it felt, because of that, it felt short. This one, even though it was really short, I didn't feel like anything was missing. So the, you know, it was really fast paced and the length didn't bother me as much, although it would have been nice, you know, if they had gone a little longer, but I think they tried to divvy it up to try to figure out, you know, which would fit for this episode, which would fit for next. So, yeah, so it was short, but it didn't bother me as much as that episode 8 did. What about you?
I mean, it didn't bother me at all, except for the fact that when I pulled it up to watch it, I was like, oh no. Because I thought you were going to freak out about it. So I was like, oh crap. But that's it.
Yeah. It's my dumpster moment. No. Yeah, actually, it wasn't so bad, but like I say, it was because it didn't seem like anything was missing out of this episode. So, you know, for the content that was in it, it seemed like a good length, I guess. And it was very fast paced. So it was, you know, there's nothing there that looked like it could have been, cut. It was very efficient. Okay. So, Mirror Universe while in contact, I wrote down during his notes. So, what was I trying to say there? Trying to remember. I don't know what I was trying to say there. I guess I'll strike that. I agree. The Paul Stamets, Hugh moments were really good in this episode. I thought that was a highlight of it.
Yeah, I enjoyed those scenes, but I was like, man, I was like, he's not really there. That's just a projection of that guy's mind, of Paul's mind, whatever, Stamets's mind.
Yeah, I wondered that, like, what exactly was Hugh? Because it sounded like it wasn't him, but it was. Like he was in the network, but not alive. So I don't, and he seemed to know things, like things that Stamets didn't know.
So, like
that he, Mirror Stamets, poisoned the network, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think that could be, though. I think, this is what it seemed like to me. It seemed like one of those times where a person like falls asleep and they're dreaming or something, and then they start talking to themselves.
Yeah.
I think that is what that is a manifestation of your things that you've picked up without like your subconscious, I guess, without really knowing it. That's you connecting the dots, I think, is what's happening. So I think that was Stamets connecting the dots.
Right.
By Hugh telling him this stuff that he was not directly told, but he might have indirectly figured out.
Right. I think you're probably right. Okay. So one thing that Mark brought up was this accident that, he was astute in noticing that Mir Stamets had been in a coma for longer than our Stamets. And he wondered if that's how Lorca got across to the other universe. And maybe. I'm still wondering how that fits into that, how Discovery fits, Mirror Discovery fits into this. Like, does it have a spore hub drive or, what? I mean, when the Terran ships have come in contact with them, they haven't said, that doesn't look like, the ISS Discovery. They were not suspicious of it. So, because I would think if they, they came up, they said, this doesn't match the ship design of the ISS Discovery, they would know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wonder if Stamets was involved in Lorca getting back, because that is one question. Now that we know that he comes from the Mirror Universe, how did he get over there? And I'm also wondering, I've got this in my notes, what about Landry? He had this relationship with Landry on Discovery. Was it just that they had spent, he had spent a lot of time with the Landry in the Mirror Landry, or was the Landry, because we know that there's a Landry in the Mirror Universe. Is that Mirror Landry or is that Prime Universe Landry? And what we saw on Discovery was Mirror Landry, because she was kind of mirror-like in the way that she acted.
In what way?
Well, I don't know. She was kind of some of the things she said and some of the things she did. She was very aggressive. She kind of said some things that were kind of derogatory to the prisoners and that. That doesn't seem like a Starfleet thing to do,
Yeah, well, they're not perfect. I didn't see any kind of behavior that would indicate that, I guess, personally. And, I mean, we don't have any idea how long Lorca had been in the Prime Universe, assuming that it's ever since his ship blew up. But when was that?
6 months ago, something like that.
So then he's been cultivating a relationship with Landry for 6 months or something. I mean, that doesn't seem out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I guess.
But his actions totally seem Mirror Universe-y.
Yeah. Well, we saw all the things, how Burnham kind of put two and two together after some of the things that Giorgio said. And, mm-hmm. You didn't get to see After Trek, right?
No, I didn't.
There's a video online that has the segment about it where they showed all the little hints that Lorca, was from the Mirror Universe. Like, I'll give you an example. When he was talking to Cornwell, they were reminiscing, and it was like, it was one night, I guess they drank a lot, and Lorca had no memory of it. And
so they might have been in a relationship before, and he just was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he seems kind of like a skis bag based on the end of the episode.
Yeah. And you notice he gave the boot just like the Klingon gave the boot in the Choose Your Pain. It's almost identical. Gave the boot? Yeah. Like he gave the boot to Maddox, and stomped on his head. Just like the Klingon did on Choose Your Pain.
Okay.
So we got one more voicemail. So this is from Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback on episode 12. First of all, I want to compliment Brian for making a very nice show notes page with some of my screenshots included. Looked very, very nice. And again, also in this episode, there were some very nice lightnings scenes, especially in the hall of the Empire on the big Empress ship. I will post on Twitter again some of my screenshots with Marvelous Lightning. I made a new hashtag because the old one didn't work so well. So that is hashtag STD, and then after the D, Discovery, so Star Trek Discovery, ST Discovery, and then Lighting. You can have a look there if it works. What do I give this episode? I give this episode ADNA molecules from a Tamaxian parasite from Tanata 7. One of the nice views I liked is when Burnham and Lorca in their shuttle are going towards the Imperial ship. Very nice shots there. And I had the impression when they getting closer, you get a kind of Star Wars-y music. I thought it was very keen of Burnham to eventually just tell the truth to the to Georgiou, because she couldn't go anyway anymore. And then we saw that the truth actually worked. But if she can really trust her, I don't know. Although she says, did you trust Georgiou in the other universe? You can trust me. Yeah, yeah. I don't believe it. The biggest no was, of course, and not a no in the sense of that they didn't film it well or the script was not good, but eating Calpian. Ayaka. I didn't see that coming. Well, and about seeing coming, I want to make a general remark. I enjoy very, very much being on Twitter, being on podcasts, listening to podcasts. But if I compare my present day watching of a series like Star Trek like this, it's also a bit spoiled by all of that, because the whole Vok Taylor thing was already predicted by people. Going to an alternative or a mirror universe was predicted. Also, Georgiou being the Empress was predicted. What also was predicted is that Lorca could be the captain from the mirror universe and that real Lorca from the prime universe had died together with his ship. I like twists and turns, and some of these things were actually twists and turns and are a bit more or less spoiled by all the predictions that come through. And my experience is a little bit that if they come true, I say, oh no, okay, this was predicted. Oh, it happens. Where are my surprises? Well, eating Calpian, that was one. So actually, it's not a no, it's a yes. Okay, till next time. This was Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you, Fred, for that voicemail.
Yeah.
The pictures I'm going to post in the blog post on this episode.
All right. Todd says, okay, I don't have all my words yet, but holy crap, that was a really good ep. Not sure how Dead Doc is alive in the network, unless he's a wormhole alien now, DS9 reference. I was horrified along with Burnham when we found out the Emperor was feeding Burnham the Kelpian. Was that her slave, Saru, from Mirror Universe? Okay, so I know someone called that twist at the end a few episodes back, maybe before the break. Who was it? It still surprised me, though. I guess that's why we don't have the Spore Drive in later shows. The mycelial network is dead? Okay, a little more. How do we think Lorca got to our prime universe? Mirror Stamets corrupted the network? Do we think that's connected to how Lorca traveled to our universe? So where's Prime Universe Lorca? Crew of the Defiant went insane when they traveled through interphasic space across universes. Was that just the Mirror Universe versions of Defiant after they came back to Mirror Universe that we never saw on screen? Because I don't remember our Prime Universe Defiant crew, Sisko, Dax, O'Brien, being driven insane on DS9, unless I just need to rewatch Mirror Universe episodes in all Trek eps again.
And I responded on the Facebook group, but the Defiant from Deep Space Nine is a different Defiant. Actually, there were two Defiants on Deep Space Nine, for that matter, but because the first one was destroyed. But this one is the Defiant that we saw in the classic episode, the Tholian Web. It got caught in interfacing space and ended up, according to the Enterprise two-parter, in a Mirror Darkly, ended up in the Mirror Universe. So,
in the past.
In the past, yeah. So
in the past from the original series.
Right. So, anyway, it ended up in the Mirror Universe in the past. So, it has been in the Mirror Universe for about a century. And that's a different Defiant than Deep Space Nine. Obviously, there were many Mirror Universe episodes from Deep Space Nine, but they were, you know, quite different. So in my rewatch, I've seen the first two now. So, Mark brought this up as well. Do we think that, you know, whatever Stamets did to the network, if that was involved with Lorca's appearance in the Mirror Universe, like, that's the question, is how did he get over there? Like, that is a big question that we have. I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because it seemed like, from what Giorgio said, it sounded like, you know, he intentionally went over to the Prime Universe and to get Burnham. Did it not sound that way?
Maybe, but I think it could have just been opportunity.
It could have
been. Or he could have known where she was going to be and went and snatched her on. I mean, he obviously got her on purpose, but I don't know that we necessarily know whether or not he went over specifically to get her. I think he just snatched the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. These are some of the many questions that I have, and, you know, we've got three episodes left, and, you know, I'm hoping we're going to know those things by the end of the season. I think we will.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you have anything else for his feedback?
Just that, in case you missed it was Mark who gave that theory.
It was Mark.
Yeah. Because I noticed a few people are saying, who was that? That was Mark. That's why he's the showcase winner all the time.
He makes our podcast better.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Next is Stefan. He says, the Lorca reveal was fantastic. I remember all the hints being placed before the Mirror Universe even became official. Lorca's sensitivity to light, his adjustment of the spore jump, knowing where Lorca came from, his room looks more like a trophy room. I can easily see that it would be the Terran Empire style to leave the ship and all the people to die while he saves himself. Someone mentioned that Lorca may be from the other Mirror Universe. I don't know who, but that was a good call. I didn't see it coming, and I like that. Too often, shows get overanalyzed, but not this time. Last week, I was thinking of the Terrans being more Klingon than Klingons themselves. Today, entering the palace in space, it looked like more like the Roman Empire in space. Yeah, and judging by Giorgio's title, it sounds very Roman. I have it actually. I might as well say it since I brought it up now. I might as well say it. Her title, or her name, was Philippa Georgiou Augustus Iaponius Centaurius.
Mm-hmm.
Very Roman.
Mm-hmm. Kind of makes you wonder if it sprung out of the Holy Roman Empire. Like, if the Holy Roman Empire never fell in that universe.
Maybe.
Maybe that's where the divergence occurred.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Looks like Stamets found his way out of the jungle by having his beloved friend guide him. He got a chance to say goodbye to Culber, but also got him, or the memory of him, to give him the moral compass. I didn't see the eating of the Kelpian coming, even if it was established that it happened before in the normal universe. all to up the evil factor among these Terrans. Ash still fighting with his inner Klingon. Never trust a Klingon. I wonder if Laurel will meet this universe's Vok and take him back to the other universe, and that may stop the war.
Maybe.
Yeah. I guess it is worth noting that the Klingons ate Georgiou. So, we saw that on the Prime Universe, and here we find out that the Terrans are basically cannibals. I mean...
yeah. Well, they're not cannibals. They're not eating themselves.
True.
They're eating a different race.
Wow. Okay. But they're eating humanoids, so...
Sentient beings.
Sentient beings. And, I mean, the Klingons, at least, Georgiou was already dead. So, you don't want to say, okay, well, that's not as bad, but it reminds me of the movie Alive. But the Terrans,
I think they ate her as more of a victory thing rather than a we need this to survive thing. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. But the other thing, it reminded me of something Saru said at one point about, you know, his race being, you know, the prey, and he mentioned that they were farmed. I guess these Kelpians are farmed in this mirror universe.
Yeah. No kidding. So I guess when she was choosing her Kelpian, that was which Kelpian she was going to eat, and she just ate Mirror Saru.
Well, I don't think that was Mirror Saru.
I thought it was.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
They're just very, they look very they look much similar. Alike. Yeah. I don't think it was Mirror Saru. It could have been, but I don't think it was. But it's kind of bad. You know, these Kelpians are farmed like Saru said, and the Terrans are the farmers.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's not that it makes it any better if it's not Mirror Saru. It just, oh man, that scene, I was like, oh my gosh, poor Burnham. She's eating her. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, Burnham. Burnham, when she picked out her Kelpian, she was picking out a lobster.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That's what it was, essentially.
Terrible.
That's what it was, you know?
If you think about, she just had, she had no idea what she was doing, and that poor guy was like, oh crap, I'm gonna die.
Yep.
I think that Sonequa Martin-Green did a very good job of expressing the feelings that I'm sure everyone would be having if they were in that same situation and someone basically said, I just chopped up your friend and now I'm feeding it to you. Yay!
And even if it wasn't your friend, it would still see that guy that you just picked out of a, you know, out of a lineup. Now we're eating him.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely, for sure, crazy with a capital Z.
It definitely was. All right. Let's see. These next three are pretty short.
Okay. Andreas says, well, it's official. This is the best episode of the season. Honestly, I cannot see how the rest of the episodes are going to be better than this one, but I'm really looking forward to every single one of them. Absolutely fantastic. All of the plot twists were excellent. And then Steve Brown says, all of these episodes in the second half are great. I'm finally caught up. My only criticism is that they found a lot of information in that node. Other than that, I've loved all of them. Each gets better and furthers the story. And then Adam via Twitter says, am I the only one confused by loving Star Trek Discovery but caring about Burnham the least of the main cast?
And that, of course, is former co-host Adam. Yeah, and I think that's something that he said on the roundtable as well. So I guess he feels about the same as he did before.
I did not know that was him. I think I responded.
No, did you?
I did.
Yeah.
And I had no idea it was him, so. Sorry, you probably already did explain, and I forgot because I didn't know.
Anyway, I think Burnham's, a lot of the characters are really interesting. I mean, I was probably least interested in Saru's character after the first chapter, but going into the second half, I'm more interested in Saru now. Probably because he's actually, you know, acting captain and not acting like a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
Cause I was getting quite tired of that, whole threat ganglia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The inconsistent threat ganglia.
Yes. And that can only go so far, I think, before it gets a little tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next is James. He says, vaulting ambition is in the books. This episode was great, and after listing my yeses, I raised my rating to an 8.5 from originally he gave an 8. Way to bounce back from last week's weak plot devices and really drive things home with answering some major questions about Lorca and bringing up that there was actually a Tyler that was replaced by Vok to further create his cover in Starfleet. I do like as well that they seem to be setting up Lorca not as necessarily a good guy from the Mirrorverse, as much as he appears, at least to be an opportunistic revolutionary, since they haven't revealed his ultimate goal as benevolent and shown just how devious he is. So I'll say part of my original theory from episode 10 is intact. Smiley face. Times two. I also like that it raises the question, at least in me, what's going on with the combustion fireball thingy at the center of the Empire flagship? Yeah. What a ship that was. Certainly nothing like we've ever seen before.
Nope.
Is that their version of the spore drive? One thing that almost went to the no category. Sorry, the
no
category. Well, was the spore drive dynamic in the Mirrorverse? It would seem that they have something similar to Discovery's already, but the Emperor seems ignorant of it. Was this just a way to get info on Prime Discovery's engine since the Mirror Universe? Discovery clearly seems to be corrupting my cellular network. Also, with Burnham giving away all the information about her and Lorca and Discovery coming from the Primeverse, it really didn't seem that playing all her cards was necessary. And what did she expect the Emperor to do? Say, okay, we'll leave you alone since you don't belong here?
Mm-hmm.
From their experience so far, that's not something anyone should expect the Emperor to do. I didn't put these in the nose, though, because I want to see where they take it. Hopefully, some clever storytelling can give us the rationale behind it. That's all I've got for today. I've really got for today. Looking forward to next week. Amen to that. I agree.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, what exactly are you expecting to happen? And did she just kill all the people in that room except for the one guy because he wasn't in the circle? Or did she kill them all because she didn't want them to tell anyone that about the Prime Universe thing or whatever?
I think so. And I think she picked him out maybe because, I don't know, she had kind of mentioned him a couple of times. He was also the guy that picked out the badge, you know,
out of her pocket.
Yeah. So maybe that was part of it, but
I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know why.
What?
I don't know why it was why he got, you know, got the singled out, but to.
I don't know either. But my main question is, why did she kill all those people anyway? Like, just to keep the secret?
I think so.
Or did she have something else in mind? Or I don't know. I just thought, oh my gosh.
Yep.
I
really want to know, you know, where Lorca's coming from and what his ultimate goal is. Cause we know now that he's from the Mirror Universe, but we still don't know how he got over and what, you know, why did he get Burnham and what is his ultimate goal? Is he trying to just take over the throne, or is he trying to, you know, is he with the rebels or what?
I do not know.
I don't know either.
Those are all good questions.
And I have no answers.
Me neither.
But the best thing, and I said this last week, is that unlike some shows, I feel complete confidence in what these producers have done so far. That I'm really impressed at 12 episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, this story is so complex and interesting at every turn. And I love it. And I just want to watch these next three episodes and see what they've come up with. And I got to say, at this point, I am loving this show even more than I expected to. And it's just like with every episode that comes, and I want to say something, Ruthie, because you didn't understand why it seemed like everybody else didn't like last episode as much as you did. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I watched that episode again and I liked it a lot more. So,
well, good.
Yeah. And this episode was really good as well. And, you know, to me, I think the last 5 out of 6 episodes have been really outstanding. So I'm just, I'm just really happy with how the show's going and I can't wait to see how it turns out.
Yep. I agree.
All right. Let's move on.
Okie dokie. Next we have Rick from Cleveland. It was perfect in almost every way. Every emotion gets hit in this episode. The Stamets-Colbert scene in the network was touching. When Wilson Cruz said the best was yet to come on Aftertrack a couple of weeks ago, he was right. Emperor Georgiou, wow, intense, manipulative, brutal. I would trust nothing she says or does, and I would avoid a meal with her. I have to wonder, was the Kelpian she made Burnham choose in the throne room dinner? I would say yes.
Yes. I would say, in fact, I would say this.
The Lorca reveal, yes.
Hold on.
Yes.
I jumped up out of my seat and started cheering when it was finally revealed. I, like many, have suspected for a while. This reveal, for some reason, was even better than the Tyler Volk reveal. All those little oddities about him suddenly made perfect sense. I have to wonder, though, if Mira Burnham was in league with Lorca, as the Emperor suggests, and was thought to have died pursuing Lorca, what really happened to her? Good question.
Yeah, I wondered that myself.
Yeah. So many questions. So little time. Developments with Ty Volk and Laurel were actually what kept this from being 10 out of 10 for me. The Klingon scalp massage to undo which personality being in the Klingon body changed to look human. This is getting convoluted. The first thing that comes to mind is Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And now I am pretty certain that the strange Stamets in the mirror thing from earlier in the season was actually Mirror Stamets. I'm excited to see how Mirror Stamets will play into whatever happens next. Even After Trek was awesome this week. Jonathan Frakes was just a lot of fun to see. On a related note, I started watching Star Trek Continues on YouTube this week after someone online made a reference to the Defiant showing up in an episode. For those who have not seen it, it's a pretty well done extension of the original series.
Yes, and I agree with that. I have watched all of the Star Trek Continues episodes, and it is really, really well done. It looks like the original series. It is well acted. It is well scripted. Is really good. So I highly recommend it.
All right.
All right. Our last bit of feedback is from Martin. He says, a much improved episode from last week with better pacing and writing, which brought the viewers along the ride so that we felt part of each revelation and discovery that the characters went through. even though there weren't that many twists that haven't been already suggested by common fan theories, the way in which they were shown made the whole episode entertaining. Yes, I agree. And I think that it's one of those things, like, even if you figured it out, and, you know, a lot of us have figured out these things, and, you know, I've heard the various theories, even if we didn't, you know, think of them ourselves, they're satisfying when they're revealed, because they're done in such a way that you could have missed them. So when you actually see them and they turn out to be true, you kind of feel good about it, you know?
Yeah. There were a lot of twisty twists that I was like, whoa!
Yep. You know, like I brought up last week that I thought that Georgiou probably raised Burnham, and, you know, that ended up being correct. And I don't think that that was a big shocking thing that I got right. It just seemed logical.
Yeah.
So, but yes, I agree with you, Martin. I think that this episode was well done, and I can't wait for the next three. So we are now to our own points. So all of my stuff is basically down in the so many questions bullet point. And you said the same thing. So you can add your questions in as we bring up, you know, bring these things in. But some of them I've already mentioned, so I won't mention them again. But I do wonder exactly what happened to Prime Lorca and how Mira Lorca kind of, you know, took over his identity. Like, I have to think that he died aboard the Brad.
Yeah.
That's
really the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense that Lorca did what he did, because it just makes sense. And for that matter, he's probably covering up for... if he did destroy the Brad, he was probably covering up.
Yeah.
You know, but what's with the fortune cookie obsession? that is a question that I had, like, did that come over from the mirror universe, or,
you know, or maybe they don't have them in the mirror universe and he discovered them here and was like, holy crap, I love this. And so he's just eating as many as he can because he knows he's not going to be there forever. Kind of like when it's around the holidays and they only sell eggnog in the store from like November to December. And so you buy and drink as much as you possibly can. I'm not speaking from experience.
Oh,
I just
no.
was saying if, you know, a person might do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? Something like that, maybe. This is the question that I had.
What?
Oh, you're not looking at the document.
Oh. I am, but is that at the bottom or something?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's further down.
Okay. Yes. Okay, I see your question now, and I have to ask that question myself.
What's with the light sensitivity?
I don't know, because I don't think that's ever been something that we've heard about before.
I don't know either, but it was I thought that was an awesome reveal, though, because right then I knew. I was like,
Yeah. I mean, and that was something that I did not see coming, because,
yeah,
you know, like I say, this is not something that I've heard before, but if that's how you tell, you know, them apart, and why is that, you know, why are they sensitive to light?
Well, maybe they spend their whole lives in space. I don't know. I don't know, but that's what I was like, why are they sensitive to light? Someone better tell me. Honestly, that was probably the most pressing question I had. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to know what the mirror discovery, first of all, are they in the Prime Universe now? And if they are, you know, what are they doing? And what were they doing prior to the switch? Because it was something that I think James or one of the other feedback people brought up, because I wonder, like, okay, she wants to know about this, the spore drive.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that the mirror universe doesn't have a spore drive? And if they don't, why don't they, considering they have the other parts of the puzzle? So it just makes me wonder what Captain Killy is doing.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't think about using it in that way. So
yeah,
that's why they haven't. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, there's no way to know at this point.
Yeah. And I was wondering, I mean, I guess they kind of explained it a little bit, but I'm still kind of confused. Did they put Volk inside of Tyler or Tyler inside of Volk?
I believe they put Tyler inside of Volk, but like, it sounds like Volk is dead. Like,
yeah, kind of. And like, I guess, did the human side win out? And that's why she was all, woo!
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
So he's, I guess, in effect, choosing to be human. And she's like, no.
I don't know. That's one question that comes out of this that I'm not too sure about. Because the question that I had is, if Tyler is alive out of this, like, how can Tyler be Tyler if he's got the body of Volk? And what does that mean for Laurel? Like, is she basically just a prisoner now? And
yep,
I just don't know.
Pretty much. I like how Saru's like, oh, by the way, we're in a different universe. She's like, what?
Yeah, kind of. And she just did not want to do anything about him until Saru beamed him in.
Yeah. Well, she thought she was strong until he was in front of her.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. Okay, so Culber, I still don't know about Culber. Like, is he in the network or was he just part of Stamets' mind? Or I guess you kind of answered that earlier.
I think he was a projection. Well, a projection of his subconscious, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, so what power is that big red thing on the Charon? Like, is that like a little sun or something? Like,
I have no idea.
And what is it? I mean, you know, are they? I assume that's how the ship is powered, but I kept on looking. There was one thing. I can't remember if it was something that he brought up while he was in the coma or if it was after the coma, but he brought up a picture, and it was of the sarcophagus ship. And I didn't understand why we were seeing the sarcophagus ship at that time.
No.
I'd have to go back and look to see exactly when that was, but there was a point where I thought we were going to see either the, you know, and for that matter, I wondered if the sarcophagus ship was actually the Charon modified. You know, the Klingons took that ship and they modified it their way and added coffins, but the Terran Empire got the same ship. Or, you know, a mirror universe version of the ship, and they turned it into that. You know, I don't know. I don't think that's the case, but I couldn't figure out why we saw the sarcophagus ship on the screen that one time. Didn't make sense to me. Okay, so they said something like, you know, that the network is failing or whatever, and it sounded like it was going to extinguish all life. Is that how you understood it too? Or is it just that all life within the network?
I did not have any idea.
I didn't get that either.
Well, he took off running to the whatever, and it's already infected some portion of their ship. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So one character we saw in the mirror universe on the Charon is someone we haven't seen in the Prime universe, and that was Maddox, Captain Maddox, who, you know, got the paddle boards to the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah. That was pretty bad.
But man, that reveal at the end when he says her name, I was like, oh my God!
Yeah, I did. I was doing that too. I wanted to send you a message, but I figured you hadn't seen it yet. And I was just going to go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Oh my goodness. Yes, yes, yes. Indeed.
Let me see if there's anything else that we talked about pretty much. Yeah. So I brought up Landry already. Yeah. So so many things that came out of this. Great episode again. Can't wait for next week. Only three left. There's only three episodes left, and then probably won't get any more Star Trek for a year.
Yeah, that's gonna be rough.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else?
I guess I kind of forgot to mention that was a. When that guy said something about the whatever DNA and they don't mix well.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of a bit of an understatement. Like, I don't know exactly what would cause that.
It reminded me of the dark matter bomb that we saw Mudd use on a couple people. And, of course, Burnham basically ate one.
Uh-huh.
It was very similar. In its effect. One thing that we didn't mention that I'm thinking about now, and it's got nothing to do with this episode, but in the previous episode, one of our tweets got liked by the director of the last episode, TJ Scott. He liked our post about us in blog post putting the pictures about the great use of lighting in the episode. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was definitely cool.
Yeah. And that was Ruthie's tweet. So you get one of these.
Yay.
Yep. All right. And yet again, I did not see any 47s. So no spot the 47 for this week again. To submit your feedback and connect with us, there are many different ways used by quite a few people this week, actually. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, because there you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget, and then there's the phone number, which is 304-837-2278. You can also use our Gmail, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. But most people post their feedback in Facebook, and every week we have a designated episode thread, and that's at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. It is a group, so you have to want to be a member, and Ruthie or myself or whoever will come by and approve you once we know that. One question I think we ask is, what's your favorite Star Trek? So just tell us what your favorite Star Trek is, and then we'll let you in. Our Twitter is @StarTrekGSM, and we got some feedback that way. Got some funny feedback this week from Ken from Chicago. And our deadline for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, Monday after the episode. To support us, one of the best ways to do it is to share and retweet us. I should mention that there's the Facebook group, the way it's set up, we're a closed group, so you can't share stuff from that. But I'm trying to figure out if either I open up the group or create a page or use the Golden Spiral Media page and get you guys to share those posts. But those will help get the word out. You can subscribe to us. That way you get our episodes when they come out. And that helps actually move us up in the ratings, as well as, you know, give us a rating or review. It's been actually... We haven't gotten any new reviews since the season started up again. So you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple, which will bring you to the Golden Spiral Media little page within Apple Podcasts or iTunes if you use the PC or Mac old style application. And of course, you know, while you're there, give us a rating or review. That would really help us out. There are other ways to support Golden Spiral Media. Just go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The next episode, which is season 1, episode 13, is titled What's Past is Prologue. And we don't know who's written or directed this one. We do know on After Track is going to be Rika Sharma, I believe Ted Sullivan again, and what's his name? Jason Isaacs will be there via Skype, I guess. So he will be on the show, just not in person.
Mm.
But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.
Journey into the endless realities of your mind with the Electric Dreams podcast.
From the genius of Philip K. Dick comes a series of short stories adapted for the small screen by a creative team including Ronald D. Moore and Bryan Cranston.
And each episode of the anthology series will be dedicated to one of Philip K. Dick's stories. This series will expand the realm of possibility beyond the realm of reality and make one take a deeper look into their own existence.
Join Wayne and Steve on Electric Dreams Podcast
on Golden Spiral Media.